again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of BitNotes with David Collins. We'll be playing some great video game music and talking about the games that are from, and hopefully learning a lot of cool stuff in the way. Hope you have fun, and keep listening. All right. One of the things about this show is that we play a lot of old music from the early days of video games. As I may have explained before, the thing about early video games is that unlike modern video game consoles where you could pretty much take a CD or record it music and just play it out of a video game just like you're playing it out of a MP3 player or a computer or whatever, with early video games, hardware is very limited. In order to get sound out of it, they had to actually have all these programmed chips that had all these preset sounds in it and then give instructions through the computer about which sounds to play at what time. It's one of the reasons that a lot of old video game is very recognizable. It's got a sort of a thing to it, kind of a style, chip and something distortion and sometimes digital. Although not all video game tunes are like that. There's even old video game, there's a lot of different sort of sound synthesizing chips out there, so you got a lot of different sounds. The thing is, when you grow up with this sort of music and you play it in all the video games, you like it and you bop around to the beats and you don't really have anything to compare it to when you're just growing up, so you just take it as is. Sometimes after you grow up, you just wonder, how exactly does that music sound to people who, well, effectively didn't grow up with this, who find it as a new thing? I mean, do they still see everything exciting in it that I saw or that I loved about it growing up, or just do they have a slightly different take on it? And it doesn't really matter that much either way. I mean, in either case, they get to listen to the music and decide whether they like it or not, which is pretty much the same as every other music out there. And I'm glad to just have a chance to, like, play out some of these tunes and let everyone make up their own opinions about it. But I will tell you my opinion on this next track. I was young when I played it. It was from a game that I liked. But for some reason, this song just really, really stuck in my head. I love this thing. I would just hum it to myself whenever I was doing anything sort of cool. I would sort of like hum this tune to myself. I mean, like, it wasn't the only video game tune that I hummed to myself, no question. But this is the ones I really liked. It was cool. It was fun. It had a great vibe to it. It kind of really summed up, made me think of the cool things that were going on in the game it was from. So why don't I just go ahead and play it? Well, did you like that one? That was the surfing music from the Amiga version of California Games. The composition there was composed by Chris Grigg, who's also in the band Negative Land. And there was also on the credits, it was also Carl Lehenbauer, David Hayes, Steve Hayes, Chris Ebert. And the game California Games was created by Epix. The game was a fun one, and like I said, I really liked the way that music gave the great vibe. It was California, and this was the early 90s, well actually late 80s, so California was still cool and the land of surfers and cool dudes and sunglasses and everything, and California was kind of less known for all the drugs and the racism and all that sort of stuff, which let's not really get into right now. But the point is, it's just, it was really getting that sort of zeitgeist of a bunch of cool dudes going on a lot of fun activities. And essentially, that was basically what the entire game, California Games, was about. You had basically six activities, six mini games, I suppose, if you're going to use the gamer lexicon. And each of them, you just played a game and you just, each had different background music and you played a game. You tried to get the best you could and then go on to the next one and see how well you did there. The music I just played was from the Surfing Challenge. That was an okay challenge. There was kind of like the surf came from the left and you had to move it along and you had to kind of like go up and down the waves in order to get points, and sometimes I'd just do a whole spin and every time you got a point a whole dial thing would come up. I mean, like, a lot of times people think the stunt genre, you know, where you do a lot of cool things and try to get as much points, kind of really came into its own with Tony Hawk in the mid-90s. But California Games, which was released in 1987, actually had a lot of that stuff going. The first stage is actually basically a half pipe. You've got your guy on a skateboard, you go down one side and then up the other and then back down that side and back up the other. And you have to click the button on the joystick and hit the thing just at the right time to get him to spin around and get all the different points. Or most likely what would happen is you'd screw it up, you'd fall down to the middle of the pitch, you'd scrape down, your skateboard would go flying up one side of the other side of the half pipe, slide back down again, hit you in the face. That was kind of the game it was. It was actually kind of like, not so much hard, but just, you had to figure it out and get it going. I always had trouble just figuring out how the half pipe worked, although it was probably one of those things that was pretty easy once you work it out. It was like, boy. And there are other things too. One of them was like a foot bag, which is also called hacky sack, where you had to like kick this ball up in the air and you move the guys across and try to kick it as well. And then just, and if you know, basically keep the ball in the air by constantly going around. And I remember, like, you know, years later in school, suddenly there was this whole beanbag craze hit and people were going, yeah, this is this cool game, you gotta have this thing. And like, of course, they were sponsored by whatever candy company was doing it at the time, and they said, yeah, you gotta just keep it up in the air. And they had these performers come to the school to get excited, and then, like, you know, so we'd buy candy and send away for these things. And like, as I was like trying to do it, like throw the like bag of beans up into the air and like keep it up, I was going, whoa, this is just like California Games. This is just like something that I really enjoyed in my video game world coming to life. And I think I did know that it actually probably existed before California Games, but it was still pretty exciting since that was my first thing of it. But yeah, there were other like really cool sports, like the Frisbee. The Frisbee was okay for actually throwing the Frisbee. It was like, there's a lot of games that use similar mechanics. You have to press the button at one point in time, then the thing goes back and you press it again, and you know, that sort of stuff. But the part that was always very funny was you didn't just throw the Frisbee, but then afterwards you got control of someone who was far in the path of the Frisbee, and they had to, like, you know, pick it up at the right time. And I mean, like, you know, they had to catch the Frisbee, and they could do a normal thing where they just land in position and actually the Frisbee gets them and they just grab it from the air. But if you do it right, you know, it ends up, the Frisbee is too close to the ground, you hit the button, they have to do a flying dive and try to grab it. And if they get it, then they're like hold it up above their head while they're face down in the ground, and it's kind of funny. So it's there's a couple of others, BMX, and I think, yeah, which is a bit of, which I always found a little tricky, and skating, which I never found fun, and I think there's one more. But it's all just a fun of great little games, you know, take place in the California surf, and all this fun little music playing in the background and everything. I mean, it was just a fun little game, or collection of six games, really, that was just nice to sort of get into. As much fun and as interesting my enjoyment of the game was, there were actually a lot of other people enjoyed it too. In fact, it was actually one of those games that was so popular, although, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, not many people are just jumping up and down and saying California 2 is the greatest game of all time, but at the time it was actually pretty damn popular. I don't talk about video game cartoon shows that much, except for that Earthworm Jim one a while back. But there was actually a cartoon series called Captain N, and it was about this guy called Kevin who gets transferred into the video game land with his dog, and they meet up with video game characters and have to defeat all these video game enemies and stuff. It was a long-running TV series, but I remember, yep, they actually had a game based off of California Games. It was actually pretty fun. They also had an episode based off of Paperboy as well, which is a nice way of doing it. In fact, if I recall, the Paperboy one was about them teaching Paperboy how to read, in a bout of irony, since it's essentially about a kid delivering papers, but he can't read or anything. And but yes, in with this California Games was mentioned on the cartoon series. And also, California Games is one of those games that got ported onto so many different platforms. I mean, like, on every platform, almost. Now, normally, I don't, like, detail out the list of platforms, you know, that a game was released on, because it's kind of boring, and it's kind of technical and geeky. But just for the purposes of this game, I'm just... And because it gives a brilliant snapshot of the games, consoles, and systems that are around at that time, I'll go through the list of every console that this game has appeared on. So it was released in 1987... And it was released on the Amiga, the Amstrad CPC, the Apple II, the Apple IIGS, the Atari 2600, the Atari Lynx, that was a cool little handheld, the Atari ST, the Commodore 64, MS-DOS, MSX, completely different from MS-DOS, by the way, the NES, the Tandy PC-IBM PC Junior, the Sega Mega Drive, aka Sega Genesis, the Sega Master System, the ZX Spectrum. And, of course, since then, it's also been released on mobile phone platforms. It has been released on Nintendo's Virtual Console system, which you can download and play on various Nintendo consoles, and also on the PlayStation Network. So, yeah. I mean, that's how it was back then. If game was popular, you ported it onto as many platforms as possible. And, I mean, like, it wasn't even like these days, where you've got a half chance of being developed on a technology that you can just... that works in multiple platforms, so you don't need to do that much work to port it. I mean, back then, it would pretty much mean rewriting the entire game just for this platform, which meant the game could actually often look completely, or sound even, completely different for various platforms. Some games even have a completely different soundtrack for it. This is before we even go into how differently they could actually play compared to one version or another. And gameplay can often be about the subtle little details. I've heard that I think Atari had this new games console and they wanted to convince everyone how great it was. But so, of course, in order to get people interested, they got a popular game onto it, Pac-Man. But unlike today, where they could probably just port the game over and play it, look and sound exactly similar, they had to actually basically recode it in that platform. And it just wasn't that good and did not set a good impression. In fact, I think some people say it's the worst game of all time. But then again, that title gets bandied a lot. But anyway... How about we move on to the other track from the California Games that I really liked? This was the background tune for Footbag. You know, or Hacky Sack. Whichever one it's called. Okay, So, we are actually keeping on a theme for at least the first two games of this episode, because the next music we're going to play is from another game that's a collection of diverse amount of like mini games and genres and stuff. But this one does not take place in sunny California. Oh no. This takes place in an airfield. So what sort of fun can you have at an airfield? Well, just take a look, listen to this music and just try to imagine what great things and adventures you can have. I'm not saying that this music is actually good for inducing such imaginings, but just give it a shot. And that great bit of music there was from Pilot Wings for the Super Nintendo, developed by Nintendo, and it was composed by Soya Uka, and she's a composer of a lot of other great Nintendo tunes and music and video game music of that era. And the actual level it was from was Rocket Belt. Pilot Wings was a fun game. It was, like I said, released in Super Nintendo, and essentially it was took place in an airfield, and you did all these crazy sort of stuff. You could go hang gliding, and you could go skydiving, and skydiving was great if you actually remembered and knew to pull the ripcord so that your paraglider opened up, and if it didn't, you'd smash into the ground, which wasn't quite as much fun. And you could also fly a plane, and there were all these floating little globes in the air, and you could fly around, and you had all this bright, colourful music playing in the background. I mean, it's one of Nintendo's things. It's been released, of course, a couple of times on the N64, and I think there's even a more recent version of the 3DS. But that was Pilot Wings, and it was a really fun game. Part of the whole thing about Pilot Wings, though, was in a lot of ways it was kind of like a technology demo. I mean, this is something that keeps happening in video games, but some new technology gets developed, so an entire game is made around it. But Pilot Wings is an example of a game that actually did this pretty well. If you recall, Super Nintendo, we're talking more in the area of 2D games, like Mega Drive, but Super Nintendo had something called Mode 7, which was a way of actually creating 3D graphics by the way it could, but by still manipulating two-dimensional sprites and images. So essentially, it was kind of a way of kind of getting sort of fake 3D, but it was kind of was 3D, but kind of wasn't, and all this sort of stuff. But all that really transformed into was the fact that you actually felt like you were, like, even though this was Super Nintendo, which you normally play like Zelda, top-down perspective, all these other things, this was actually felt like a full three-dimensional airfield. And like when you took off the plane at the beginning, you'd see a rear view, and you'd pull up, and you'd fly around, and it would just actually feel like it would feel like a full, strong 3D location. And that at the time was like really, really big. It was like, whoa, look at all these areas and look at all these places you can go and the technology is so cool and everything. And of course, Mode 7 was used in a bunch of other games. But this was really a game that kind of showed it off, since you could fly around and do whatever you want. like I said, Rocket Belt. The name of the track is Rocket Belt, and that's because it often played while you were flying around on a rocket belt. It was basically a jetpack, or it was more, you know, with the thing sticking out towards the side rather than just on your back. And it was fun. Flying around, jumping around. I always remember there were these like things which you could, if you landed too hard, of course you'd end, but the game. But there were these things where if you hit them, you just bounce back up in the air again, but they'd break. So I think there were skylights or something. It was always very low resolution. So I started having fun, like trying to bounce the rocket belts all across the skylights, breaking all of them and just damaging the airfield and likely causing huge amount of property. But I don't take responsibility. I mean, whoever gave me that rock belt, whoever in this airport facility decided it was best to that someone of my personality would do no harm flying around on a rocket belt, well, I think I would seriously question the amount of sense that person is making. So Pilot Wing, of course, is just a very nice feel-good game as well. You've got the blue skies, you've got all the simple, you've got the objectives with all the balls in the air, and you got it. They're green, and you hit them and turn red and stuff. And of course, with skydiving, you have to speed through the air, and you want to do it fast. But all these like rings of balls open up, and you have to go through them all in sequence and everything. So it was just a fun bunch of activities that kept you going a lot, and that was pretty cool. So yeah, Pilot Wing's a great compilation of all these aerial sort of little mini games that fly around the place. Now, on to our last game of the show. This game is called Red Faction, developed by Volition Inc., who of course now are in the Saints Row series, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Red Faction was a first-person shooter game. It was developed for like the PlayStation 2 and such consoles, and I actually played it, and I may not have thought it was kind of the best game out there, but it was a fun first-person shooter. Fun game where you rent around. It took place on Mars, and you were just coming to the end of your mining shift, and then apparently when a guy wants to get off the shift, a security guard kills him, and suddenly this opens up a gigantic, you know, revolution with everyone running around the place and all the miners rebelling because of inhumane work conditions. I actually remember this game because I opened up the box and took out the instruction manual and read the story of the game. And it was like pretty damn amazing. The actual intro story for this game was actually incredibly well written. It like had like a boots in the, you know, feet in the boots account of a guy reaching Mars with promises, and then just finding grimy conditions and terrible stuff. And they were even mentioning stuff about how he got to his bunks, but even his own bed wasn't his, because it was like he was just sleeping on it while someone else was on his shift. And when that guy got back, he'd sleep on it. So I love the atmosphere developed and all this sort of stuff in the book. And then I played the game and found that the game, I've realized that the single like page story entry in the manual was probably better written than the game itself. I mean, it's a fine game. I mean, the dialogue gets going, there's a story about you going, there's a rogue security technician who's giving you advice, and there's this nice moment in the game where suddenly he says, walk into this room, and you do, and suddenly behind a set of bulletproof glass, you see him, and he says, hey there, that's me, and then he waves to you, and then says, okay, you better get back to foiling this great big corporation from subjugating all these miners and everything. And so that's kind of how the game works. I mean, you know, whatever else. You know, while I wasn't the biggest fan of this game, one thing I liked is something that it had in similar with Half-Life, in that, you know, each area stretches onto the next area and the next area. It's not like, you know, a mission ends and then the screen blacks out and you wake up in a different area for whatever reason. You know, it really feels like a struggle. You're going from one area to the next, and it's just, and, you know, when you finish one area, you got to open it up, and it's just complete procession through nearly all the game. The game's other distinguishing feature was effectively another technology thing it had going, which was geomod technology, which is basically that if you threw an explosive at a bit of rock, it actually blasted open, so there was a great big hole at the rock. And this was pretty damn impressive. In fact, it is still pretty damn impressive. I mean, a lot of games back then and still now just want you to go through a process and, you know, a set of locations. So they don't like giving you too much tools of destruction to completely destroy the environment, because otherwise they might have you a locked door and they say you need a red key card and it's in that building over there through all these enemy troops. So if you could just take a gigantic rocket and blast open a hole in the wall, then it kind of defeats that whole like strategy path they've got laid out for you. But Red Faction was still a little like that, but it actually had this whole thing where, you know, explosives, rockets, grenades could just blast open the wall, and sometimes you would just have to bypass a door just by blowing a great big hole in the wall beside it and such. And it was actually pretty cool how it did that. I mean, I remember one time, like, a grenade went awry and it blasted up. And then I looked down and realized that the extreme explosion had just given access to a little cavity with a bunch of power-ups in it and ammo and stuff. So it was pretty cool. So the game has went on and had a lot of sequels made out of it on the Red Faction thing. And I'm not sure any of them directly follow the plot of the first game or anything. And a lot of the future games in the series have also tried to push this destruction technology as further, like having you blow up great walls or structures and having whole things come tumbling down. Just goes to show how much fun old-fashioned destruction can be. So, I'll leave it there for now. This has been David Collins with BitNote. You can download episodes on dublinsouthfm.ie and follow us on BitNote FM on Twitter. And leave you with Faction, which was composed by Dan Welts and plays in Red Faction. So, this is Dave Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening. Oh, one other thing. The game Red Faction had these stealth sequences, and stealth is a whole huge topic in games. I'll cover them some other time.